Okay, and you are listening to WRFG Atlanta 89.3 FM. I am Greg, host of Alternative Perspectives. Thank you very much for listening, and we will begin in just a minute. So I want you to hold on tight. Right. Whoa, that's pretty loud. Hello, everybody. You are listening to WRFG Atlanta 89.3 FM. Welcome to Alternative Perspectives, Atlanta's only radio hour devoted exclusively to the issues affecting Atlanta's queer community. I'm your host, Greg Bossen. Thank you for listening. And first of all, the weather. Thank God. I mean, it's just been ridiculous. And so yesterday and today, all of a sudden, it feels like fall, and I am perfectly fine with that. The opinions expressed here are those of myself and my guests, and we do have three people in the room today, one of which may not speak, but the other one most certainly will. So we have guests here, but the opinions expressed by myself and my guests do not necessarily represent the views of WRFG, its employees, board, volunteers, funders, or listeners. So tonight's topic is something that is near and dear to my heart, which is mental health. So I looked up some statistics. The National Council for Behavioral Health in the U.S. estimates that almost half of all adults, this is 46.4%. This was a report that came out in December of last year. So almost half of the people in the United States will experience a mental illness during their lifetime. And approximately 1 in 5 adults in the United States, that's 46 million, experiences mental illness in a given year, which would indicate that 20% of the population is having some sort of mental difficulty. And I am one of them. No, I'm not. Yes, I am. I may be. Well, obviously, I answered my own question for you. Yeah. Oh, hold on. Let me make sure that you can be heard. Because I did not. Oh, I know why you can't be heard. All right.
Test.
There
test.
You are.
There I am. The whole audience missed my joke.
Yes, oh, yes. No. So we have Tom Jones with us. Not that Tom Jones, but another Tom Jones. A better Tom Jones. And he is here to help us discuss all things therapeutic. And he is an associate professional counselor with a graduate degree in marriage and family counseling. So we are going to get into the details of my personal life, my personal emotional situation. But before we do that, we need to not have music playing before we do that. This is what happens in live radio, folks. It's very exciting. All right, there we go.
New news of the queer.
I know that's right.
Oh, no, she didn't say what?
All right. That was well worth that, wasn't it?
Oh, my Lord.
Yeah.
That was the funniest thing.
All right. Well, it gets weirder. All right. So we're going to start with local news. I'm going to do an abridged version of the news show because I really want to talk to Tom about there's a lot of stuff going on and a lot of things to talk about when it comes to mental illness, and I think it's really important. But here we are with the news. So we're going to just do a couple of news stories that I think were important. One of them, this happened originally in April of 2019, but it's just come to light last week or a couple weeks ago. This happened in Alpharetta, Georgia. A candidate for the U.S. House seat in Metro Atlanta said a drag queen story time event in Alpharetta was an attack on our children. So this is something that's happening across the country, where there are drag queens that are going to libraries and are reading children's books to children in drag, which to me seems perfectly harmless. But apparently Marjorie Taylor Greene, a construction company owner, made the comments on a Facebook Live video that she posted in April during the event. She later removed the video, but the video has been obtained. But anyway, she is a candidate for the U.S. House seat in the 6th Congressional District. So we're hoping that she does not get elected. But anyway, the 90-minute video includes footage of Stephen Agarashibal, who performs under the name Miss Terracotta Sugarbaker, reading to children. I mean, drag queens reading to children. It doesn't get any better than that.
That's a creative name, too. That's a real creative
name. It is. Extra points for that. Uh-huh. I think I like it better than the actual name, but Irigashibal. Maybe he's married. So Green, the person who is saying it's an attack on our children, the one who's running for U.S. representative seat, she kept filming. She filmed for like 90 minutes. She says, let's see, I do not have any hate or ill will against this man. I just don't like that gender confusion is being put on our young children. This is a type of thing that if they want to do it in their private homes is fine, but in this community of Alpharetta, you have a Baptist church across the street and a Christian school. You have a Methodist church, another Christian school. Let's see. Green later showed a photo of the drag queen and then said, that's an abomination that that's an abomination that just read four children's books to children. So abomination was how she described this gentleman in drag. So, and trans does not mean gender change. It just means a gender refusal and gender pretending. Truth is truth. It is not a choice, which I always wondered what happens to hermaphrodites then. If God chooses what you are, what do you say to a hermaphrodite then?
Yeah, there's no answer for that at all.
All right. Well,
I'm very on the other side, I mean, there's no explanation.
Yeah, no, it's true. Okay. We have to start standing up and stopping this attack against our children. But anyway, whatever. All right. So that was the point is Marjorie Taylor Greene running for office and a homophobe. All right. And then the only other story that I wanted to cover is the Trump administration. So I'm not sure if you're aware of this. Hopefully you are. But there are two Supreme Court cases that will be examining whether it's okay to fire someone for being gay or trans. So, and one of the cases involves someone that was fired, a child welfare service coordinator in Clayton County that was fired. And his name is Bostwick. So it's Bostwick versus Clayton County, Georgia. And they fired him because he's been working there for 10 years, but he joined a gay softball league. And so they fired him. I've tried gay softball one summer. It was not pretty. So, but anyway, hopefully this person was better than I was. But that's clearly beside the point. The other case involves Zarda versus Altitude Express. This is a person who is a parachute instructor who got fired for being gay. So these two cases have been melded into one. And the lawyers are basically saying they're trying to see, because right now you can fire someone for being gay in this country unless there's a state law that prohibits it. And that's not the case in Georgia. So you can fire people in Georgia for being gay. So anyway, the men's lawyers are basically trying to say that firing someone for being gay is against the Civil Rights Act of 1964, which prohibits employers from discriminating against employees on the basis of sex, race, color, national origin, or religion. This is the thing. The 64 Act didn't say anything about homosexuality, or it just said on the basis of sex. So check this. So the lawyers are saying that if the men, let me see, if the men, if it was women who were attracted to men, they wouldn't be fired. But because men are attracted to men, they were fired. So therefore, they're making the argument that the firing is based on the sex of the person. So that's the argument that they're trying to make to get it under the 1964 law.
Yeah.
So it's I don't know that that's going to work, but hopefully, because I mean technically this law, the 1964 Civil Rights Act, there was not an intention to include gay people. So anyway, but the Trump administration is arguing that that because a gay man and a gay woman would both be fired, they're treated equally under the law. So therefore, they're not discriminating on the basis of sex. So the thing that upsets me the most is that they're even fighting it, you know?
Yeah.
So it's rather upsetting. So anyway, with that, we will be back in one moment, and I will leave you with a nice little song here. And when we come back, we'll be talking about mental health with Tom Jones, who knows everything that you could ever imagine.
That's true.
Yeah. Very yeah. True. So I would listen to whatever this gentleman says, because he knows exactly what's going on. So we will be back in 1 minute.
Hammond's House Museum presents Hammond's House Honors, an evening of celebration and recognition of excellence in Black visual art. On Thursday, September 12th at 7:30 p.m. at the Southwest Arts Center, 915 New Hope Road, Southwest, Atlanta, Georgia. Hammond's House Honors will remember iconoclast photographer Roy DiCarva on the 100th anniversary of his birth and honor seven individuals who elevate the visual art of the African diaspora. This glamorous award show will be hosted by Monica Pearson. That's Thursday, September 12th at 7:30 p.m. at the Southwest Arts Center, 915 New Hope Road, Southwest, Atlanta, Georgia. For more information, the website is www.hammondshouse.org. This has been another public service announcement brought to you by your listener-sponsored and supported Communio radio station, 89.3 FM WRFG. Your station for progressive information and hand-picked quality music.
Back. For those of you that are just joining us, I am Greg Bossen, and you are listening to Alternative Perspectives, Atlanta's only queer radio hour on WRFG Atlanta 89.3 FM. And we are speaking with a program therapist. He actually has a lot of titles, some of them legal and some of them not. Tom Jones, we're speaking with Tom about mental health and mental health care in the United States. Tom is an associate professional counselor with a graduate degree in marriage and family counseling. So now we're all about you. How are you doing, Tom?
Good, man. How about yourself?
I'm doing well.
Thanks
not for too me on. Not too well though. I still have issues, which we'll be covering during the program.
Yeah, what the listeners don't know is that this is just going to be an hour-long therapy session for Greg.
Yes, yes, it totally is. And anybody who's a really good friend of mine know that's pretty much what I do all the time. Being with me is kind of like my therapy session. All right, unless you're dating me, then it's your therapy session, which is why it took me 40 years to find somebody that would be with me. But
next time we'll have Jeffrey on.
Yes,
and
yes.
About it.
Well, the key to finding a good relationship, and I'm going to tell you this right now, you want to lower your standards. Okay? And so that's the key. But all right. So just a couple of more statistics here. We already told you that 46.4 or half of adults in this country will experience a mental illness during their lifetime. One in five adults experiences mental illnesses in any given year. This last statistic is most upsetting, and I guess this is the ultimate worst thing that can happen with somebody that has a mental illness is to commit suicide. And the national suicide rate has been increasing at an increasing rate. It's increased 33% from 1999 to 2017, according to the CDC. And what's worse is a broader Associated Press analysis of government records indicates that American suicides are now at their highest point in 50 years. It is now the second leading cause of death for Americans under the age of 35. So obviously it's important. And so we got a lot that we can talk about, Tom, but I guess I wanted to start with your experience and how long have you been working at a psychiatric hospital? And it's here in Georgia. How long have you been there?
Yeah, I've been there for, I interned there for a year and I've been there for about a year. So I'm pretty new into the game. I kind of got out of grad school a little over a year ago. So I hope I can help out a little bit. I don't have the most extensive wealth of knowledge, but I think working in this field for even 2 years, you just learn so much, and you see so much more suffering than you originally anticipated. Mental health, especially mental sickness, is kind of like hidden under a rug. People don't know it because you can put on that face, you can put on that mask to a certain degree, and also we just don't talk about it enough in this country. So hopefully we can give a little bit of hope and some information that some people might need.
Yeah, you know, and it reminds me when you talk about that, when you come across somebody that you know reasonably well, or maybe you know them just a little bit, the first thing is, hi, how are you doing? Like we said to each other. And then just like the answer is always fine. You don't go into the details. And the reason why is because, you know, well, people don't really want to know about that stuff. But then you talk to somebody who's known somebody that's committed suicide, and they're like, oh gosh, I wish they would have told me what's going on. I wish, you know, I mean, when I ask somebody how they're feeling, I really want to know. Yes. It's not just, you know, a perfunctory statement, you know, fine is boring to me.
Yeah. Which is why, by the way, you're perfectly suited for this job.
Yeah.
Cause Greg on the, like I knew Greg for a little while now, and he really does have this insane ability to make you just feel completely understood and known and validated in what you're experiencing.
And then I can start taking advantage of you.
Yeah, and then you exploit it, and it's a really, really effective technique.
I appreciate that. I think you're amazing.
Oh, thank you very much.
But we don't want to go too far with that. That'll get into some other things. All right. Oh, and you know, one more thing I do want to say. You know, this show is about issues affecting the queer community, and we are going to talk about issues specific to the queer community, but we're going to talk about mental health as a whole. And because I don't want the show to just be, it's like, I don't want to limit myself. You know, in other words, just because mental health affects other people besides gay people, therefore we can't talk about it. I mean, that's ridiculous. So that's why I'm kind of stretching a little bit, so hopefully you will understand. But all right, so the first thing that I want to talk about is the psychiatric hospital, because I counted them. I've been to, I think, 21 different therapeutic experiences over the last 30 years. I've been to 5 therapists, 2 psychologists, 2 psychiatrists, a hypnotherapist, a sexologist, who, by the way, massaged me to orgasm. I'm serious. He told me that. Anyway, we'll get into that in a minute.
Dude, you might have more experience than I do.
An energy healer, 2 meditation experts. I've been to an ashram. I went to the School for Humanity and Awareness for a few years. There's a woman named Apollonia there who's actually quite amazing. I've been to 2 kinesiologists. I've had audio therapy, colonics medication, and turmeric and ginger smoothies. Which are supposed to help.
The most important of all mental health techniques.
But I have not ever been to a psychiatric hospital. And I'm going to tell you that there was a moment. Well, yeah, there was more than one moment. But there was a time period a few years back where I was going through a really, really, really tough time. And nothing that I was doing was working. And it was this anxiety I was suffering from. And I couldn't seem to get anything to ease it. And it didn't seem, it felt hopeless. So I felt like, well, either I'm going to kill myself, which I decided that was not a good idea, because then there's really no hope, you know, there's not a after for that. Or I would check myself into a hospital. And the reason why I chose not to do that is because I have this idea that you don't get good care in psychiatric hospitals. There's kind of a one-size-fits-all solution. They tend to push pills, and costs can be prohibitive. I looked into a few of them that were very, very expensive. Finding someone, a place that dealt with anxiety in particular was tough. There's a lot of treatment centers that deal with addiction, but so anyway, I don't know. I just wondered what your thoughts were on that, having worked in a hospital like that for a while.
Sure. And all types of therapy are going to have their pros and cons. It's about finding which type of therapy is best suited for what it is that you are experiencing and what it is that you are trying to deal with and trying to be more equipped and have more tools. What the hospital setting does that is really beneficial is it kind of feels like a school for mental health, which is, I think, should be taught in schools beforehand, but
totally.
But here's our best version of it. So at least at the hospital I work at, there's an hour of process group, which is people in a room talking about their issues. And the benefit of this is to normalize somebody's experience. It's to have other people there to validate. It's to have other people there to understand and hear you in your pain and not try and sweep it under the rug. You said it exactly right on earlier. It's so easy to fall into, I'm fine, everything's fine. And I think often that's because feelings, especially intense feelings, are uncomfortable. And they feel kind of icky. And so a lot of times, and we're all guilty of this, we'll diminish someone's experience not even realizing it, just because we feel uncomfortable in their pain and we don't know how to control it, and we feel powerless the same way that they do. So process groups really do a good job of having a shared experience and then just connecting over the shared experience and really hearing other people go, man, that must be really tough. Man, that must really hurt when that happened. Oh, I'm so sorry that happened to you. That is so healing. Sometimes we just need someone to listen.
Yeah.
And the first thing they teach you in therapy school is, hey, shut up. Shut up for a little bit right. And just let somebody else talk. Don't try and give them a solution. Don't try and give them an out. Just let them have their experience and validate and be there with them. And then part two of the hospital experience is that we do lectures, psychoeducational lectures. And this is kind of any range of mental health issues. I really like teaching CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy. It's a specific brand of therapy that's really well researched. Talking about, you know, mindfulness and coping skills and triggers and warning signs, just so we can be aware of what's going on with us. Because oftentimes we just think we have these emotions and we just can't control. We have no power. Like you were expressing, there's hopelessness. Mm-hmm. And what's really, really effective is learning, oh, I have triggers. I can know what they are and be prepared. I have these warning signs that I exhibit. Maybe I get more irritable. Maybe I isolate myself more. And that can tell me, oh, maybe I'm spiraling. I don't quite know it yet. And then three, coping skills. What can I do differently rather than let myself kind of spiral out of control? I have more power in this than I think.
It sounds like it's important to become aware,
yes,
of what is going on in your psyche, emotionally for you. And I mean, make it real when we're talking about something like this. So I guess it's kind of like maybe you'll wake up, you'll have had a bad dream, but you don't remember what the dream is, but you're just kind of left with the feeling and you don't know what the dream was that caused the feeling, but the feeling, you know, is shame or pain or hurt or something. But without the dream, that happens throughout the day, I think. I've noticed for myself where, you know, if I stop and try and pay attention and say, how am I feeling right now? I'm like, I feel awful right now, but I won't know why. And then I have to trace it back to to something that happened, like a trigger, something that somebody said that sprung some sort of negative thought train in me that I have to self-talk to get out of.
Yeah, and the other part of that is sometimes our emotions don't always have a reason. Sometimes our emotions just show up and they happen. They don't always have to be triggered. And then if you can't trace it back to what's going on, well, we still need to deal with this feeling. We still right. need to do something about what I'm experiencing. And that doesn't mean making it go away, but it means at least acknowledging its existence and not trying to run from it.
Well, that and this is something that I've always wondered, and I've dealt with this a lot throughout my life. But when you're in the middle of some sort of emotional anxiety over something related that, you know, like maybe I'm feeling less than, I'm feeling shame. And how much energy do you put towards trying to get to the root cause of that, which may be like way in your childhood, like I guess Freudian type stuff, versus not really worrying so much about the cause of it. And as a matter of fact, if you focus too much on it, it'll grow. And so therefore, maybe I shouldn't be doing that. Maybe what I should be doing is trying to, you know, intercept it or like stop it by focusing on something else. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. And it's as with most mental health, a lot of the time it's both and. Mm-hmm. It's again, different kinds of techniques are going to be good for different kinds of things. I like both. So I can talk in my personal life. I got some anxiety too, and that's something that I really have to be cognizant of. And it goes both ways. I see my therapist, and we talk about what my childhood was like, and maybe where this anxiety kind of sprung up, and how it entails with my personality, and just that self-awareness piece is so healthy. But self-awareness is not the end-all be-all. Self-awareness won't stop a depressive episode. You know, you can, how many times have we been at a place where like, I feel so sad. Okay, I know that. I'm still sad though.
Right.
You know, and so then it's part two is, how do we manage these pretty intense feelings? There's, for anxiety specifically, there's grounding techniques and mindfulness and stuff to kind of slow us down, because anxiety is a very fast sensation. You know, you tense up, you start to shake, your heart races. So slowing down is really effective. And then there's, you know, ones for depression as well. How do we get out of bed when we feel like our blanket is 800 pounds and moving just feels almost unfathomable as an idea? There's behavioral parts of engaging in our mental health, and then there's the self-awareness, looking back and maybe finding some answers there.
Yeah, I it feels to me, and I'm, this might be a different way of saying the same thing, but I spent a lot of time early on in my childhood very miserable, very upset, and not really understanding where it came from. And it was important for me to figure out what the deal was, which, you know, we can talk about. But that didn't that doesn't necessarily translate. Like, it's half the battle, but it's half the battle. It's not the other half.
Yes.
So that's when behavioral stuff started helping, which, you know, like something like positive self-talk or meditation. But the negative voices in my head, I mean, it's unbelievable how fast they are.
And you're hitting on something that our patients frequently express, which is this sense of overwhelming odds to combat this thing. And I'll use this metaphor, especially with negative self-talk.
Mm-hmm.
I'll use this metaphor. With addiction, there's the metaphor of the two wolves. And if you get bored, go Google the two wolves story. I use the metaphor of if there's two lawyers in your head. We've got a lot of practice. One lawyer's got a lot of evidence. He's been gathering for years why we're no good, why we're worthless, why we don't deserve any help, why we suck as a person. And we do very little work in trying to make sure that the other lawyer has a case. We don't dwell in his world. And so, of course, when we talk about how can I combat this, it feels overwhelming, because at this moment in time, we've compiled so much evidence into our negative perception of ourselves. And part of the therapeutic work is giving some evidence to the other guy, to the light guy, and starting to decrease what the bad lawyer says. And of course, that just takes time. None of these coping skills do you do overnight. It just takes energy and time. And I don't know about you, but like, mental health is hard work.
It is.
I don't know if you've ever left a therapy session just drained and all you've done is sit on a couch. I saw my therapist 2 days ago. I was wiped, man. I went home, took a nap.
Yeah.
Just because unrustling some of this stuff, man, it's work.
Yeah.
And I think that's also what we're afraid of a lot of the time, is that we look at the overwhelming odds and we go, it's not worth fighting. And we get hopeless. Like, I'll never win that.
Right.
And with the, at least with the addiction part of the hospital, the last line of the Serenity Prayer is just for the day. Just for today. You don't have to worry about the mountain. You don't have to worry about the lawyer. All you got to worry about is what you're doing today. And is that healthy or not healthy? And yeah. that really helps kind of get out of this overwhelming, helpless place.
Yeah, I think that's right. Because when you're dealing, for me, with a lot of anxious, negative thoughts, fears, second guessing of myself. You know, it feels like you're never, it's going to be there forever. So if you just focus on the moment at hand, it's a little bit more handleable, which I guess is like an addiction.
Yeah. And you bring up a really good point, which I think it's really easy to fall into the trap of, well, when will I be cured?
Right.
When will I be cured of this anxiety? When will I be cured of this depression? And that's simply a poor way of looking at mental illness. It's not like cancer where you can cure it or not cure it. It's more like something that we manage, like closer to diabetes in a
right.
way that we know we have it, but we still have to take the energy and the steps to monitor our symptoms. So sometimes my clients will, they'll name their disease. They'll name their depression. They'll be like, oh, Frank's really getting to me today, man. Frank's really,
yes.
he's letting me have it. And you're just like, man, that's tough. And you just try and do what you can to manage it and not let it overwhelm you.
Well, what I like about what you're saying there about naming the anxiety or naming whatever the problem is, give it a personality in a way. When you're in the middle of negative thinking, and for me, it was always relationship related or medical related. So it would be perhaps I've broken up with somebody and then my fear is that I've made a mistake, that I shouldn't have broken up with this person. And really it was my fault for, I should have been happy in the relationship and I wasn't. And I'm never going to find anybody else. I'm going to die alone. Yeah. And you know, on and on and on like that. So when you're in the middle of it, you're just in the middle of the thoughts. But by naming it, the person who's saying the name, Frank's really giving me a hard time, that's a separate entity. So you immediately separate yourself from the voices. And so it creates a self outside of the voices.
Yes. And that's so effective.
Yes.
'Cause oftentimes we think we are our illness. And this doesn't have to be just about mental health either. It's we are our shame. We are our negative self-talk. And what can be really helpful is reframing that as, I am Tom and I have anxiety. I'm not anxious Tom. I am Tom and I am living with this thing. And that does, again, it doesn't have to be a diagnosable illness. It can simply be, I am Tom and I am today dealing with pretty bad self-image issues, you know.
Right.
It helps separate us from this internalized and personalized experience, and because what that can do is make us think that it is hopeless. If I'm just always this way and I
right.
can't control it, there's no point in trying to do something different.
Right. Right. For those of you that are just joining, you are listening to Alternative Perspectives on WRFG Atlanta 89.3. I'm your host, Greg Bossen, and we are speaking with Tom Jones about mental health and mental health care in the U.S. Tom is an associate professional counsel with a graduate degree in marriage and family counseling. And I wanted to say one more thing, Tom, before we moved on to something else that relates to this. this idea of kind of separating yourself from the anxiety. And I'm not sure this would work. Does it work with depression too, having that kind of separation from it?
I assume so.
Yeah. But what I did is the anxiety was coming from my kid inside of me is what I decided.
Yes.
And so the kid was just afraid. And I never really grew up with any parents that did any sort of parenting to me at all. And so I kind of grew up not really parenting myself. And so in what I did was I created a voice for the kid, a baby voice. Mm. And then I had an adult voice. And I literally would talk to the kid in the mirror, and then the kid would talk back to me in the mirror. And what was neat about that is that, again, I've been to all these therapists, and typically the kid would show up at therapy, say whatever the freak out was, the adult, who's the therapist, would counter it, and then sometimes it would work, but my kid was very clever. So for every positive self-affirmation, the kid can come up with another negative one. But the problem with it, first, therapy, you know, it costs, and you're only there for the hour or the hour and a half, and then you're done. But the kid, the fear, the anxiety, the depression is with you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So the good news is, if you grow that adult piece of you enough, that adult piece of you doesn't have to say the clock's over. So I, you know, I'll sit in front of the mirror for 3 hours if I need to until I can calm myself, you know, down a little bit.
Yeah, and what you're describing is, I think, what all therapists aspire to do, which is not that you come to therapy because I've got such great advice or I'm so good at my job. It's to steadily equip each of our patients so they can do this work for themselves. Every good therapist should, their goal should be to work themselves out of a job. Get to a point where each patient feels equipped enough to work on this and do this in their own time. And if they need a tune-up every couple months, they can come in, get a tune-up. And what you're describing, by the way, is very normal therapeutic work as well, because, yeah, a lot of times we are grown adults behaving in the way, or the behaving in the neuroses of our child self. Like, think of someone who grows up in, say, an alcoholic family, and that environment breeds chaos and feeling like your voice isn't heard, and a lot of times a child will try to do whatever they can to mend that family, to keep that family in control and to reduce the chaos. What do you think an adult that kid grows up into adult, what's going to happen? They're going to be controlling. They're going to be oftentimes very anxious all the time, because you don't ever know when it's going to pop off, so to speak. And so you have to do some really work. And what kept me alive at a certain point, what helped me find control and peace, is no longer helping me anymore.
Doesn't work anymore.
In fact, it's hurting me.
Yeah.
And we have to address that kid that still thinks, if I let go of this power, the whole family will fall into chaos. And that's, we carry that with us, like you said, all the time.
Yeah, no, yeah, definitely. All right, well, we're going to take a quick break here. You are listening to Alternative Perspectives, WRFG 89.3 FM Atlanta, and we are speaking about mental health with Tom Jones, and we will be right back in a moment.
What's the best way to enjoy Labor Day in Atlanta? Well, music lovers know it's the WRFG Labor Day Blues Barbecue. So join us this Monday, September 2nd at the Park Tavern in Piedmont Park for a family-friendly all-day blues blowout. Our headliner is award-winning Alligator Records recording artist Selwyn Birchwood.
You got to practice what you preach. Break the habit of hypocrisy. The
lineup also includes gifted guitarist and drummer Larry Griffith, prolific singer-songwriter Bill Sheffield with drummer Sandra Sin, and Eddie Ninebolt led by talented 22-year-old Brooks Mason. WRFG is proud to dedicate our 34th annual Blues Barbecue to one of the best-known trombonists in the blues, Little Joe Burton, who will perform with the rousing Atlanta Horns. Please join us this Monday, September 2nd at the Park Tavern in Piedmont Park for a great day of blues. The doors open at noon, the music starts at 1 and won't stop until 8 p.m. The Park Tavern at Piedmont Park is in Midtown on the corner of 10th Street and Monroe Drive. Tickets are $18 in advance through WRFG.org or $25 at the door. Kids under 12 get in free. Our 34th annual Labor Day Blues Barbecue is sponsored by the Atlanta Blues Society and the Big Green Egg, with additional funding from Fulton County Arts and Culture. Proceeds benefit your independent community radio station, WRFG Atlanta, 89.3 FM.
All right, and we are back. You are listening to Alternative Perspectives. This is your host, Greg Bosson, on WRFG FM at WRFG Atlanta, 89.3 FM. And we are speaking with Tom Jones, who is a program therapist and an associate professional counselor with a graduate degree in marriage and family counseling. So before we move off of it, I wanted to, because we've kind of moved away from talking about the psychiatric hospital. So I guess I just want to know, how long is a typical stay in that hospital?
Sure. And I think it's apropos that our conversations generally go off the rails.
Yeah, no, totally. Totally.
It seems like it does when we're just talking right. In the pool or whatever. So general length of stay. So I work at a hospital that has two different kind of modes that it does. It has the inpatient unit, which is those people that are brought on a 1013, which means they were a threat to themselves or somebody else, and they were required to go into a mental health hospital for stabilization. They stay about a week.
Okay.
We generally get them in there. We give them the right medications. We try and give them therapy, but more than anything, we try and set them up for what's the next step, what's the longer term solution.
Yes.
Here. Stabilization is quick. It's just to make sure you're not going to hurt yourself or anybody else. Then there's part two, which is outpatient therapy, and that looks about 4 to 6 weeks long. It's you start 3 weeks, what we call PHP, and that is all-day therapy. That's a process group and an educational group in the morning, go to lunch, a process group, an educational group in the afternoon, go home. After 3 weeks of that, 2 to 3 weeks of that, we'll step our patients down to what is called IOP, which is just half day. It's one process group in the morning and one educational group, and then lunch, you leave at lunch. And that's kind of our way of slowly handing back mental health
right.
to the patients. It's we give them a lot of support at the beginning, and then we slowly let them, like someone riding a bike with somebody holding you and then letting go and letting you kind of take it over from there. And then we try and make sure that they have some kind of outpatient, consistent therapist or psychiatrist, whatever it is they might need.
So you can refer people out, I guess. It's a treatment plan they leave with, yes. I guess, or something like that.
We spend a lot of time doing aftercare work, which is finding what is the next step for
you. Now, because we've been talking about anxiety and depression, and I want to continue to talk about it, but are a lot of these people, is it more about addiction issues at the hospital? Or, I mean, do you have people that are in there simply because they're dealing with extreme anxiety or depression?
Yes.
Oh, often. Okay.
It's about 50-50, I would say. Our hospital's got about 50% addiction and 50%. We call it psychosis, but that's just kind of the blanket statement for mood disorders, bipolar,
right.
depression, and then sometimes psychosis, schizophrenia, schizoaffective. But a lot of times what you'll find is that these are comorbid. And what comorbid means is that they happen together. So
yes.
someone with extreme anxiety feels scared all the time, drinks to kind of maybe calm the nerves.
Right.
And then over time, alcohol, which is a depressant, can make it worse and can accelerate. And then, not accelerate, it can depress. And then you drink more, and then on and on we go. The feedback loop has begun. Yeah, there's no, it's, I guess it's not as dichotomous, but yeah, certainly we have the extremes on both ends. People are there for just addiction, then people are there just for depression, and then all shades kind of in between.
So, all right. And I mean, it's weird for me, if I'm feeling anxious when I go through these periods, and I've consistently gone through these periods, I've probably been through 5 or 6 of them in my life, and they last about 6 months to, 8 or 9 months, even a year, where I'm a mess. Mm-hmm. But I whatever my vices are, like eating or drinking or drugs, I don't do any of that. Whenever I'm anxious, I don't do any of that. I just can't even. So I know when I'm partying, like when I'm ready to party, that means everything is fine. But it's weird. It's the opposite, I think, for most people.
Why do you think that is? I'm curious. Because that is different. I'm curious.
Yeah, I think, because I'm concerned. Well, first of all, I don't eat because I have no appetite.
I get that one, too.
The other thing is if I do eat, then I'll gain weight. If I gain weight, I'll look bad. And then I'll feel even worse about myself.
Oh, that anxiety spiral that we experience, yes.
If I drink, it simply makes it worse. It makes me paranoid. So I don't do any of that stuff. I'm completely miserable and obsessed. I have an obsessive brain. But that's all I focus on. There's no sense. I'm not going to have a good time. So I don't do it. It's just, I just sit there and obsess is what I do. It's miserable, but
yeah. And yeah, you'll see those are the two extremes. It's, we have people who feel that intensely and then just try and shut it down with whatever distraction we can find, which oftentimes is maladaptive and destructive. Or there are some people who are just comfortable in it and they just sit in it and there's no attempt to do something different. And I think mental health tries to find, okay, how do we find something that can address this without being destructive? Like, a lot of people's primary coping tool, that's the word we use, is alcohol. Okay, what can we substitute for alcohol that is healthier, that still hopes to address and maybe decrease the symptoms, but maybe in a way that's not so destructive to our body and our brain?
Right. Yeah, now I forgot what I was going to say about it, but because you were so incredibly interesting. But I know what I was going to say. So in a way, what I did was, you know, I had a very obsessive mind. So I would compulsively worry and think about whatever it is that was happening for me. And it's always either going to be a relationship issue or it's going to be some sort of medical thing that occurred that I'm waiting to heal, or maybe it won't heal. Maybe I'll have to have surgery. Maybe it'll never heal and I'm going to die, you know. But I would just live in that space and not really focus on anything else. And so to a certain extent, being able to set it aside for a moment to just focus on something else, even for just 5 minutes, is helpful, you know, but I always viewed it as bad because it's compartmentalization. You're not paying attention to it. And so, whereas a lot of people, I think, deny and avoid, and they don't, and so they're, and meanwhile, their anxiety or their depression is running their lives and they're not noticing. I was in the opposite boat. I couldn't stop thinking about it.
Yeah. Can I give the people at home who might be connecting with your story two coping skills?
Yes, yes.
Practical coping skills.
Yes.
And this is for especially when the anxiety is overwhelming and you feel spiraling and it's just taken off, right? The first one, sensory techniques are really, really good for this. Like holding ice cubes. It sounds, how can holding ice cubes help your mental health? Well, when we get in these anxiety spirals, your brain just goes and it goes and you feel entrenched. That's hard to get out. Doing something with your body physically can make your brain address what's happening in your body and hopefully derail this train of anxiety that we're experiencing. So when you're holding ice cubes, your body has to attend to that sensation. Your brain is going, what is this? Is it pain? Do I need to be worried about it? Should I focus? Is this a life or death situation? And getting out of that spiral can be really helpful. Taking a shower is in the same vein. Changing the thermostat even a little bit, can your body has to attend to that too, can help those spirals. Those are really good grounding techniques for, especially if you're about to have a panic attack. And part two is mindfulness, which is, you've already said it a few times, in that mindfulness is very present focused. It's just focused on what's happening right now in the room, in my body, in my head. Because I think anxiety does a lot of living in the future. What about this? Have we thought about this? Did you forget about this? And it panics in this place that we can't control, which then exacerbates the feeling of powerlessness and hopelessness, and it spirals. So mindfulness, it looks a lot like, what do I see? in this room. I see a black microphone. I see Greg with his blue shirt. I see a fan. I see a lot of different posters on the wall. What do I feel in my body? Well, my heart's racing pretty fast. I've got these tremors. What's happening in my brain? Well, it's moving really quick. It's being very fast paced, not a lot of pause. What do I hear? What do I smell? You can mindfully drink coffee if you want to.
Right.
You take a sip and go, what is happening? And how does this feel? Is it warm? Is it cold? Could it use a little bit of microwaving? And just focusing on the exact present moment can be so helpful when dealing with these runaway trains of anxiety or these runaway trains of depression or anger or any intense emotion that we feel trapped by.
Yeah, and I would add to that because this is some of, you know, I had to do this myself a lot because, I mean, I just want to say I got so bad, I would be breaking out in cold sweats.
Yes.
And where I, you know, I really couldn't function. You know, I mean, I was functioning, I was, but not very well at all. And once whatever the work part of the day was over, you know, it was a nightmare. And then I couldn't sleep. And then that would make me, I had broken up with somebody who was a horrible individual. But anyway, I knew that he was out at the bars and I was freaking out in bed. And, you know, and I wouldn't have slept all night, which meant I had dark circles under my eyes. I was pale. I looked tired, which made me look less attractive, but he's more attractive. He's at the bars. Of course, he's drinking. And, but he's cool. I'm not. And I mean, it was just, it was horrible. So anyway, I had to do some of what you're talking about. And what happens is, this is something that I would add as a tip. Even just the tiniest little bit of a calming, like if you're on a scale of 1 to 10 and you're at 50 and you go down to 48, that's a win.
It's huge. That's a one battle.
That's a win. And you have to do that because what happens is I would start to get a little less anxious and then I'm like, but I'm still really anxious. Oh, and then it would immediately go back up again. And that's actually the worst of all, to get anxious about being anxious. Have you ever had that happen?
Of course.
It's the worst.
Oh, it's terrible. And it feeds on itself.
Yeah. Yeah.
And well, and what you're describing is really, really important point. And I think it's that, one, celebrate the wins. And like, I think about depression, getting out of bed is a huge win for someone in the midst of a really bad depressive episode. Mark that.
Yes.
It's not like we often run into this comparison game. Well, I still feel sad, so nothing's working. It's kind of this all or nothing.
Right.
Thinking. By the way, everyone at home, look up cognitive distortions if you want to research more about this, which I'd love to get into, but we're running out of time. But part two goes back to what we were talking about right before we got on the air, which is that our mental health and our physical health are so connected. When you're anxious, your body bears the brunt of it. You don't sleep. You carry stress in your shoulders, in your stomach, in your head, and how easy is it to use coping skills when you're on 2 hours of sleep,
right?
Or you don't have enough food in your body.
It makes it a lot worse.
Yeah, it hurts. So, yeah. So maintaining our physical health as well as our mental health, they go together. So I guess they're impossible to separate.
Yeah. I think that's true. Yeah, we are running out of time. I told you it goes quick.
Man, it really does.
Yeah, it really does. Is there anything that you or me want to say? We didn't say anything about dealing with people who are gay.
We had about 50 questions and we answered 2 of them. Maybe.
Well, we spent a lot of time on anxiety, and I think that's because both of us deal with anxiety. I didn't know that's true. You did.
I do.
Yeah. You know, it's because we're smarter than everybody else.
That's exactly it.
It's true, though. Don't you think that people that have a lot of mental problems are typically more intelligent?
I'm not going to go down that road.
I am. Because if you really notice, I mean, life's tough. So, and does the third person want to say anything? Nope, doesn't want to say anything at all. We were going to therapize him on the air, but...
Yeah, we didn't have time. Hey, we'll have to do that next time.
Yeah,
can
no.
Can we get a couch in here? Can we put Nick on a couch and just... psychoanalysis.
Yeah, we totally could. We totally could. All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on the air. I really do appreciate it. And I mean, is there any sort of resources that, and I'm throwing this at you without you even saying anything, but
So
where would you suggest somebody to go who's listening and is having a tough time and maybe doesn't have a lot of money?
Obviously, the top resource we're always going to give is the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, which is 1-800-273-8255. Or you could Google National Suicide Hotline. That's a really important resource. I would say if you don't have a good run at your first therapy session, go again. These take time. These build relationships. Look up therapists in your area. Look up therapists that work with your insurance. Look up potentially mental health hospitals if you feel like that could be beneficial.
There's an organization called the Metropolitan Counseling Center.
Yes.
That's off of Buford Highway that offers counseling at discounted rates.
Yes.
They have a sliding scale.
And there's Emotions Anonymous support groups everywhere. There's Alcoholics Anonymous support groups everywhere. My whole crux, and if I could get on my soapbox for 2 seconds.
Yeah, go ahead.
Is that there is help, there is hope, there is resources. There are resources. I think often we feel trapped and hopeless because we don't know what to do differently.
Right.
And I'm hoping that at least through any kind of open conversation about this, we find there are far more resources than we ever thought. It's just on us to go and find them, and they are there. So please do not stop looking if you have maybe a bad therapy session or a rough EA group. There's help to be had, and I hope everyone can take advantage of where it is.
Yeah, and if you're having a tough time, particularly with suicide, I think a lot of those decisions are made. I mean, the final decision is made in that moment. And if you can get yourself to a phone and talk to somebody, is it going to solve all your problems? No. Are you going to feel the same way you felt again? Yes. But just for those few minutes, that's a win. And it can get you over a hump, because there's plenty of people in the world that you'd be leaving behind that would be upset.
Yes.
So people that you may not even realize. Well, all right. Well, that's it. We squeezed out every single minute we possibly
really
could. Next up, we have What the Folk. And the theme of it, did I not say that right?
No, it's just hilarious. What? I just forgot.
The theme is out of your mind.
Yes, out of your mind, which is perfect.
It kind of flows.
Yeah, we didn't even plan this. All right, find somebody that seems like they're upset. Ask them how they're feeling.
Yeah.
And if they say fine, say, I don't want that. I want the real answer.
Yeah.
And see what they say.
Perfect. Thanks for having me.
Love you. See you later.